This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Ruby has reluctantly accepted an offer from Mrs. Thompson, but she knows from experience how desperation can lead to a trap of obligations. Ruby found herself close to losing her temper when young Edie pestered her for answers.
Edie picked at peeling layers of discoloured sellotape that held a faded list of typewritten rules on the inside of the bathroom door. Ruby turned off the bath taps and felt the water with her hand.
"Stop that and get your things off," said Ruby. "I want a proper bath before the rush. Get in."
"Ow, it's hot," said Edie.
"No, it's not. Sit down slowly."
Ruby ran her finger lightly over a cluster of yellow bruises on Edie's thigh.
"What's this?"
Edie shrugged.
"Did someone knock you off the jungle gym?"
Edie shrugged again.
"Sit down. I'll take the tap end. Tuck your legs up and make room for me."
Ruby put a leg on each side of Edie.
"What did you do while I was away?"
"I had a sandwich with lunch and sausage for lunch, and Auntie Pim let me dunk biscuits in my milk."
Ruby scooped water over her breasts and shoulders. "You weren't greedy, were you?" She soaped her armpits with a scrap of soap from the wash house. It was going to make her smell like a charwoman. Still, it would do.
"I was allowed 4, said Edie.
"How far through kidnapped did you get?"
"I was just getting to an exciting bit. Then Mrs. Thompson wanted me to go and learn how to play chess. I think she'd like to have her own little girl. One who plays chess."
"Don't be like that. She was being kind."
"I know, but still."
Edie turned her mouth down. Ruby lowered her voice.
"You didn't talk, did you?"
"Only about Uncle Barry's garden. I remember that."
Edie trickled water through her fingers.
"You told me never to talk about you know where. I'm not a baby. I know the rules. Never squeal."
"Where on earth did you get that expression?" "Turn around and I'll wash your back." Edie shrugged and turned with a splash.
"I did tell them about the girl who kept getting sores full of pus, and that cat with ringworm that hung around at school. And how a boy said the caretaker shot it with a real German Luger."
Ruby's fingers made soap tracks on Edie's skin. She traced a heart and soap lather on the thin, fragile neck. What sort of strength would her daughter grow to have? What sort of woman would she become?
"And his teacher said the caretaker would get into trouble if it was true."
It was one of those moments when she let her heart flood with love. She wanted to wrap her arms around her daughter. Instead, she flicked bathwater at her. "Time to get out," she said. "Dry yourself properly and don't drape the towel on the floor."
"But you haven't told me what happened when you went to town."
Edie rubbed at her face and the front of her torso with the towel.
"Dry your undercarriage," said Ruby. "Use the end of the towel."
"Have we got talcum powder?"
"Oh, for goodness sake."
"I wish I could go with you tomorrow. I want to see the shops and things."
Ruby pulled the plug and dried Edie's back before patting herself dry. Get dressed, chicken, before you get cold.
I want to have a look at the park and the square. When can we go?
You're giving me a headache. When we're back in the room, I'll tell you all about it. She wouldn't be telling Edie about the woman who was hanging around one of the corner pubs. It had been hard not to stare. That was the same tatty muskrat she'd seen before, in Arcadia's glim dining room. It had been hard to tell the woman's age. Under her makeup, the woman might have been 40 or 50, or simply brutally ruined by the time she reached 30. Who could tell? It didn't matter. With her cigarette in the corner of her red mouth, she'd been sidling up to men outside the pub, mincing from one to the other, pawing, clutching, swinging her hips with her fur coat flung open in spite of the cold wind. It was obvious what she was up to, and it wouldn't be asking men for pennies for the phone. Back in Auckland, in the early hours of the morning after her own night's work, going in a taxi along Quay Street or down past the bottom of Beresford Street, she had seen old girls like that doing the same thing, working the wharves or waiting by the gasworks, selling a few minutes' grubby pleasure to the men coming or going before dawn. She could have ended up like that herself one day, when she'd lost her looks. In the broad daylight of Palmerston North's Main Street, was that woman oblivious to the looks of contempt from the people giving her a wide berth? An old girl like that. Even here, in this town? Why not? This was a town where money was being made, and her in the muskrat coat was getting hers. Respectability was a veneer, after all. The sight had played itself out. Shuddering, Ruby had retreated to a wooden bench in the half-shade of a tree. She'd gone off the idea of buying cigarettes. All thought had vanished. She just sat with the fragrance of flowers, the noises of traffic and people, the shrieks of toddlers in their harnesses held back from the pond by their mothers, and the squabbling of ducks all swirling around her. She didn't move until the shade lengthened and shifted. How she wished that when she got up, she could walk into the low western sunlight and keep walking. Away. Leave the flat town behind. Walk far away toward the blue, bush-covered hills she saw in the distance. Edie bounced along the corridor.
Well, did you get a job?
Shh. Wait till we're in. Ruby put the key in the door of number 9.
What sort of job was it?
In the cold room, Ruby rubbed the towel on the wet ends of Edie's hair. I went to a few places, she said, but they didn't want anyone. Then I came across a furniture workshop. The man said he'd been let down by a boy who'd walked out. He offered me 10 shillings to put away some boxes and tick it all off on the delivery sheet.
Sounds easy, said Edie.
Ruby picked up the hairbrush and used it, flicking on her own tangled hair this way and that. It was awful. She passed Edie the brush.
Why?
It wasn't as easy as he made out. He didn't bother to say that every box was packed full of dozens of tiny boxes. It took all morning. I had to work out which box went on which shelf. Then there were all the chits to go through and put on the right spike.
What was in the little boxes?
Tacks, nails, screws, things like that.
Did he give you 10 shillings in the end?
He did. Do the back of your hair. You made a fuss about needing a brush, so now you've got one, brush your hair properly. Honestly, if you don't, I will cut it.
You haven't got any scissors.
Edie stuck her chin out. You're getting a bit too damn cheeky for your own good. Edie sat on the bed.
Are you going back to the box place?
Not likely. Besides, the man's a bloodsucker. Still. 10 shillings. Edie glowered reproachfully.
Isn't bloodsucker a swear word?
I don't know, said Ruby. It might be. He really got my goat, though, standing there watching me do the work.
Once, you said you'd like to work in a shop. Why don't you do that?
Can't.
Why not?
Edie tilted her head.
When we were on the train, it looked like there were lots of shops.
You don't know what you're talking about, Ruby snapped. She'd had it. A day of chewing on desperation, people looking at her as if they'd like to grab a broom and sweep her out like a bit of rubbish, and being told, "Nothing here, sorry." Then spending hours unpacking boxes, ticking papers, breaking a fingernail and bruising a shin for a measly 10 bob. It wasn't bad pay, but there was no job there for her.
But, Edie started.
Don't be stupid. You've been into shops, haven't you? When you were little, Auntie Hilda took you to quality shops. I'm not talking about the pokey little places on some corner. I mean town shops, real shops, respectable shops where respectable people go. Even as Edie paled, Ruby couldn't stop herself. And what do shop ladies in real shops wear? The shop doesn't give them those smart outfits, you know. They have to buy their own. Have I got a neat white blouse and a black skirt, or a trim black frock to front up in, ready for a job? No, I haven't. I can't even buy nighties for us to sleep in.
Edie's chin quivered. Ruby clenched her jaw and ran her fingers through her hair again, clutching it in her fist, twisting it until her scalp stung. She sucked in a long breath through her teeth. Her daughter was a bloody millstone around her neck. She hated herself for thinking it.
Don't cry.
Ruby pulled Edie close, kissing her forehead. A noisy raspberry of a kiss.
I haven't told you, have I? I bought something.
For me?
Edie wiped her face with the back of her wrist. Ruby pulled a paper bag out of her purse.
For both of us. Look.
Undies! Brand new ones!
Edie gasped with delight.
Socks! Oh, Mum, thanks!
Poor kid. One pair of pretty undies, a pair of socks, and it's like Christmas. The 10 shillings had only covered half of her purchases. Ruby had dipped into her reserves, but the look on Edie's face made everything she'd been through during the day worth it.
And stockings and undies for me, she added.
They were sensible Lyle stockings. What would she need nylons for? Still, Lyle's stockings were warm. Who knew what she'd be doing next?
Shall we put them on now?
Edie's grubby cotton bloomers were already at her ankles.
Yes, let's. We should probably wash them first, but I think the ones we've been wearing need washing more.
Edie reached up to kiss her.
Thanks, Mum.
Something else. Ruby reached into another paper bag. Toothbrushes and a tube of Ipana, all to ourselves. So we'll be cleaning our teeth properly tonight. The morning was brisk when Ruby stepped into the street with her smile ready. It was not a happy smile. There was no happiness in her. It was not even an agreeable smile. She avoided having a face that might signal allure or gullibility. Today, she wanted to convey that she was affable and capable. She clipped along towards the square, keeping pace with a tune in her head, a swing version of an old song, "I'll See You in My Dreams." The tune put her in an optimistic mood. It would be good to find a job where she could sit down, rather than stand around in heels. With the sun shining and the bracing breeze on her face, she turned over the idea of working in an office. She might fill in for a girl on sick leave, jot dictation in a notebook like Katharine Hepburn with a handsome, congenial boss behind a big desk. A man stepped out of a doorway, lifting his hat as he crossed her path. Looking up, she realized she was by the doorway of a large commercial building. Just what she was looking for. Offices. The cage door of the lift clanged shut after her second attempt to bang the catch into place.
Then it resisted the command to move until she'd pushed the third floor button several times. Still, it saved her feet and gave her more time to decide what to say while the lift shuddered its way up. A scrap of paper had been sellotaped, askew, to the frosted glass panel of the first office. Out. Back at 9 o'clock. That hour must have passed a while ago unless the note referred to the following day. She shrugged. The person might have forgotten to take the note down. People do that. She tried the handle. Locked. Gold-painted lettering on the next door read F. B. Snell. Through the glass she made out her shadowy figure. As she raised her knuckles, the door was opened by a wizened fellow who barked,
"Who are you? What do you want?"
Ruby glimpsed untidy shelves full of papers and books. Before she opened her mouth to reply, the door was slammed shut and she heard the key turn. At a neighbouring office, an elderly receptionist wrenched the handle of a counting machine and wrote in a ledger book. She gave Ruby a stern glance, wiped ink off her pen nib with a scrap of blotting paper, lowered her spectacles.
"Good morning. I'm new in town," Ruby blurted. "I'm looking for short-term office work."
She'd made a botch of that. "Where did you hear that we needed someone?"
"I can do a bit of shorthand," Ruby added, thinking of the squiggles one of the girls at Rat's Nest tried to teach her.
"Name?"
"Barton. I'm good with figures, too." Why didn't she think of that before?
"Figures, Miss Barton. Do you mean bookkeeping?"
"Yes."
"Just a moment." The woman poked her head through an open door behind her desk, said something, and resumed her seat. "He'll see you in a few minutes." A ruddy-faced little man in a pinstriped suit and the remnants of reddish hair plastered across his pate pulled back the door with a wide grin that did not reach his eyes.
"Come in, my dear," he puffed. "Come in."
His hand was on her waist, like any gentleman guiding any lady toward a chair. As the door shut behind them, a familiar chill crept up Ruby's spine. It was not a surprise when his hand slid down and gave her buttock a firm squeeze. She held her breath. It was best not to make any sudden move, never wise to upset a predator. Outside, a pigeon on the window ledge turned and flew into the greying sky. Ruby knew the routine. She'd heard enough stories about the chances girls took when they went looking for a respectable job. His hand circled her rump.
"Tell me, exactly what kind of work?"
She sidestepped out of his reach, her spine straight.
"I've made a mistake," she said stonily.
He licked his lips.
"Perhaps you have."
On the corner of his desk sat a Murano paperweight, glass flowers trapped in glass, within her arm's reach. It would be easy to snatch it up and hit him with it, but landing in jail for clonking a lech was not in her plan. The woman at the desk peered over her spectacles as Ruby flounced past. Across the landing, the din of several typewriters reached her before she got to the door bearing the legend, "Typing Services." Knocking was pointless. Beyond the unattended reception desk, the room was filled with rows of tables where more than a dozen young women sat bashing away at typewriters. A girl, not more than 19, in a fashionably tight skirt and carrying a wire tray full of papers wedged against her hip, looked up with a cherry-coloured smile. Ruby was out of her depth and out of place and jaded with the weight of her 27 years. Before she could back out, the cherry-lipped girl shouted cheerily over the noise.
"Hello, can I help you?"
"Is the manager in?" Ruby said.
"Out at a meeting."
Cherry Lips gestured to lead her to a small side office where the sound was almost blocked out.
"Out until 2 o'clock," she continued to shout.
"Would you like to come back later in the afternoon?"
"Oh, gosh, I should take your name, shouldn't I?"
"It's all right," said Ruby. "I'll come back another time."
"Sorry, I should have asked."
The girl gave a self-conscious laugh.
"Is this about the advertisement?"
The noise of massed typewriters was horrific. A bubble of laughter rose in Ruby's chest and collided with a clot of despair. It was absurd. She couldn't even type.
"Why don't you come back tomorrow?"
the girl said.
"All right. Thanks."
Ruby knew she wouldn't.
"Please, where's the nearest ladies' restroom?"
"Next floor down. Bye."
The girl smiled and waggled her fingers. Ruby clumped down the stairs. It wasn't the lavatory she wanted. She needed stillness, privacy, somewhere to think. From the moment she'd decided to leave Mo's place, there had been no time for thinking. On the train, she'd been busy making sure Edie didn't leave her side. When Edie wasn't chattering or wanting something, she'd grizzled. Come to think of it, when had Ruby last allowed herself to have thoughts to herself? It had been best not to. Thoughts had to be brushed away, like moths, from a woolen coat. As she reached the bottom step, the floor seemed to split apart. Her hand slipped from the banister.
"You all right?"
A woman's brown face peered into hers.
"Are you sick, dear?"
Words didn't come.
"I can get you a cup of tea."
"No, I'll be all right, thank you."
Ruby glanced behind her as if she blamed a fault on the stairs.
"You didn't trip," the woman said. "You just flopped. Poor dear."
Poor dear? That was like the slap in the face when someone fainted. It brought her to her senses. "I'll be all right," she said, pointing to the arrow that said ladies' restroom.
"Let me help you."
Kindly meant as it was, Ruby had the urge to slap the woman in the mouth. Hitting someone or smashing something would do her good. She got to her feet before the woman's worrying hands could help her.
"Please, really, I'm all right."
The woman's concern was left behind. Poor dear, poor thing, those words had tipped her into a predicament once before.
Not this time, never again.
The restroom was clean and empty. Grudgingly, she parted with a penny for the slot that unlocked the cubicle, hung her purse and coat on the hook behind the door. Then she sat, elbows on her knees, her head in her hands. On that first night at Arcadia, when she'd spread her possessions out on the bed, she'd totted the money up, but she hadn't counted up what skills she possessed. Factory work, or all day at a knitting machine, sounded simple enough, but committing to full-time work was out of the question until she found somewhere to live. The sound of someone else's penny clunked in another door. A cubicle opened, then shut. Moments later, a chain was pulled. The user left. Ruby lifted herself out of her slough of worry, stretched, then sat again. What kind of place would want whatever skills she did have? No use putting it nicely. The woman she'd seen on the pub corner was like a detour sign to a road she was not going to take. She began itemizing what she was good at. Working with figures was no trouble, and she'd learned bookkeeping at Moe's. But who wants a temporary bookkeeper? She was a decent seamstress. At Rat's Nest, she'd been allowed time to make clothes for herself and Edie. Mo had given her pocket money for repairing the girls' frocks to keep them presentable, and she'd made underpants and slips out of Air Force parachute silk, when they could get it. A dressmaker might need someone to help with a pile of alterations. Ruby wrinkled her nose. She'd have to force herself to face the sneers and derisive glances of the types of women who ran places like that. Cats. Still, she had to try. She pulled the chain. In the mirror over the sink, this time her reflection was that of someone at the end of desperation. Who'd want to give someone like that a job? She splashed cold water on her face, dried her mouth with her glove, combed the front of her hair and pulled it back. It looked good like that. A card of hair clips shouldn't cost more than a few pennies. Oh well, she said aloud to the face in the mirror. We'll get on, won't we? Make the best of it. She pinched her cheeks hard and gave them a rub to bring some colour back.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialised novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.